places like New York or California, Massachusetts, Illinois, these places aren't as free as it might seem to some of the people living there.
I'm Catherine Mengue Ward for Reason TV, and today we're speaking with the authors of a new study called Freedom in the 50 States. So why don't you start by just explaining what you were hoping to capture in these rankings? What are you trying to demonstrate or show?
Well, the unique feature of our study is that it looks at both personal and economic freedom. So everything from taxes, labor regulations on the economic side to homeschooling regulations, gun control, marijuana laws on the personal side. So really what we're trying to do is see which states are best in economic and personal freedom, and let that be a tool for citizens and residents of these states to lobby their state governments or to figure out where they want to move.
And because of America's federal system, states have a lot of ability to shape public policy in important ways that affect people's daily lives.
So maybe you could explain just very quickly what your methodology was. How do you capture these somewhat ambiguous measures of freedom, particularly personal freedom?
Well, overall freedom is composed 50% economic freedom, 50% personal freedoms, or paternalism, if you will. In terms of the economic freedom side, it's half of that is regulatory policy, half of that is fiscal policy. Now, of course, any of these types of indices, there's going to be a normative element to how you come up with this. But what we try to do is capture those policies and weight them highest on those that affected the most people, involved important constitutional rights, and that we thought were intrinsically important to being free.
So who are the five big winners? What are the freest states?
So New Hampshire comes first, South Dakota right behind, and then Indiana, Idaho, and do you remember fifth? Missouri, I think?
Missouri.
Yeah.
So maybe I'm just a kind of cosmopolitan snob, but those don't sound like states that we traditionally think of as people flocking to them to live there. So how do you explain this sort of tension between people's desire to be free or the sort of attractiveness of these free states and the fact that most of the country's population doesn't live there?
Well, actually, one of the interesting findings of our study is that there is a substantial number of people who are moving to the freer states and that are exiting the states that are less free. And so there's a robust correlation between states that are free in the economic and personal realm and in migration. So people are moving to these places. Now, I think part of your question, though, is about, well, there's lots of folks, a lot of kind of hipsters, cosmopolitans, that want to go to places like Washington, D.C., or New York, or L.A. Well, that's certainly true, but people are voting with their feet, and the majority of people are leaving places like New York, which has seen a real strong hemorrhaging of citizens and a tax base, to places like Texas, or New Hampshire, or South Dakota. And that's controlling for things like cost of living and climate. So actually, a lot of people are moving to those places.
And how do you sort of address the issue of culture, which is a little bit different than kind of the regulatory or economic or sort of personal freedom environment? That is, people, I think many people who move to New York, for instance, would say they go there because they feel freer there. It seems like a place where they have more choices, right, as opposed to, say, moving to New Hampshire, where the political environment might be better, but people don't feel like the world is quite so wide open. Where does that phenomenon fit in with your results?
Well, it obviously doesn't fit in with our index itself, which looks really at the formal components of freedom, the ways in which government regulations and taxes and so on can affect people's liberty. But it's something that we have to consider as well, right? So people think about freedom on the margins. Obviously, not every single person is going to want to live in South Dakota or New Hampshire. So some people, they're going to make that decision to live in New York, including myself, because of other reasons. And so some of those reasons can trump freedom, but that doesn't mean that freedom doesn't matter, or that it doesn't matter a lot.
And I would also add that places like New York or California, Massachusetts, Illinois, these places aren't as free as it may seem to some of the people living there. So it's not as if there are these deep blue states that are economically free, right? There's a lot less regulation on business and so forth, but they're personally free. Actually, a lot of those deep blue states have nanny statism across the board. So if you're a cosmopolitan living in New York, but you want to eat your favorite kind of donut in a way that a company is willing to sell it to you, well, the state is going to interfere with that. There are trans fat bans, for example, in places like that. Or just think about the use of culture. If you're taxed so highly that you can't actually afford to go to the Met all the time as a middle-class person, let's say, you're not going to be able to enjoy that Met, even though that Met exists for some people. And I would also add that these places that have economic dynamism because of freedom, these are places that are attracting people and wealth, and they're growing, because there's also a correlation between economic growth and economic freedom. And these places will grow over time, and they'll develop the types of institutions that are satisfying to people who want a robust cultural life. And Joel Kotkin, for example, has done some work on this and talks about how, well, maybe Oklahoma City will be the next Oz. Now, I'm not sure about that, but hey, we could imagine these types of institutions developing. Because remember, during the British Empire, as people have pointed out, the United States wasn't exactly the center of the cultural universe. And I think Kotkin has talked about that, and I think that's true. So maybe the person who goes and flocks to New York or LA will in the future be flocking to places like Houston.
What would it take, Jason, for you to move to Houston?
Well, I grew up in Houston, and I hated the climate.
So but, there's maybe an unfair question. What would it take for you to move to Houston?
Well, I live in Texas, one of the reasons I moved there was because the political culture was something that was amenable to my tastes. Of course, I moved to a job as an academic. There aren't a lot of jobs. I'm not a lawyer that can practice law anywhere. But it does factor in the decision of people that care about freedom. I simply did not apply to any jobs when I went on the job market in a place like California because I didn't want to live in a place like that. And so it does matter to some of us. And I would live in a place like Iowa if the right kind of job came up, as opposed to, say, Illinois, in which, making a middle-class salary, I'm not sure it would stretch as far. Or that I would want to have all the nanny statism of a lot of these places like Illinois or New York. But people are going to have different views, and that's one of the reasons why we actually, for the index, on our website at www.mercatus.org, we actually have a tool where you can plug in some of your own views about freedom into the rankings and shift the rankings based on what you think matters. So we're pretty pluralistic about our approach in that sense.
So actually that sort of brings up this other question, which is, you're capturing the variety between states, but how much does that matter in a world where the federal government is so powerful and so much more overwhelmingly relevant to people's experience of freedom and how politically or personally or economically free they are? Does state variation, does it matter enough? Does it matter enough to influence people's decision-making about something so big as where they live?
I think it matters a great deal. People, I think, underestimate the extent to which states have autonomy still. Areas like education, that's still primarily a state and local responsibility, and I think that's an extremely important area of policy, right? If we who favor liberty want to influence the next generation, that's probably the first area that we should look at reforming. One way to measure the impact of the federal government versus the states is to look at indicators of tax decentralization. So how decentralized our tax collections in the U.S. So what we see is that that's declined some over time, but still state and local governments collect somewhere between 35% and 40% of total government taxes. So that implies, the federal government is bigger and more important in a fiscal sense than the states and localities, but doesn't completely overwhelm them. So states are still really important.
Thank you very much, gentlemen. For Reason TV, I'm Catherine Mangue Ward.